Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The ability to debate successfully means a lot more than just being able to shout more loudly than the other guy. We'll be talking about that on today's program a little bit later, but first, our veterans and taking care of them. A relatively new facility has opened in St. Louis to help homeless vets. That was about a year ago. Tens of thousands of America's 23 million vets are homeless or at risk of becoming so. Many of them are women, including women with children. The facility here is run by a national organization called U.S. Vets. Its CEO and president is Steve Peck, a decorated Marine combat veteran of the Vietnam War. He also happens to be actor Gregory Peck's son. He joins me in studio, along with Army veteran Bill Wallace, executive director of the U.S. Vets St. Louis facility. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
I've given the number, the national number of vets and those who are homeless. Bill, let me ask you, can you give us any numbers with regard to what's going on here?
Well, in St. Louis, we believe there's about 500 homeless veterans in the city proper and branching out to the county. But there's not really a good gauge as to how many homeless veterans there really are in St. Louis, because so many of today's younger veterans who are Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are practicing something called couch surfing. They don't identify as being homeless, and they thus are going from a couch at mom's house to a buddy's place and sometimes sleeping in their cars in parking lots. And thus, it's really tough to attain the real number.
Many of those that you've just mentioned could be on the streets in the months ahead.
They could be, yeah. Absolutely.
Steve Peck, why is the transition so difficult?
There's a number of factors. I think when people think of homeless, they think, well, maybe they did something wrong. Maybe they're not trying hard enough. But there's a lot of guys who go into combat, who combat with combat trauma, with what we call post-traumatic stress. And that is really a disability that prevents them from moving forward. The intrusive thoughts, they have a short attention spans. They're what's called hyperarousal. They react to things differently. So it is a condition that really has to be dealt with before they can move on in their lives.
Well, we've had many wars, obviously, in our history, and many of those who fought in those wars, I'm sure, came back with similar kinds of disabilities. What did we do with them?
Over the years, different methods have been used. I mean, this is a condition that has been around since the Civil War. They called it soldier's heart.
Sure.
Dependent upon the war and how they were received. In my era, in the Vietnam era, that was an unpopular war. We came back to a society that really didn't want to hear about it. And the rates of PTSD were relatively high because they couldn't weren't thanked for what they did. They weren't appreciated. They couldn't express what they had gone through with other veterans and with their family and friends. So you tend to internalize it. In Vietnam was about 20%. In this war now, they think about 30% are going to come back with that condition. And the VA is handling some of them, but many of them are out there untreated. And over the years, over the ensuing years, 3 to 5 years later, maybe they lose a job, they break up with their family, and they'll end up on the streets.
Bill, you'd mentioned the stigma a few moments ago. How do they deal with that in your experience, number one, and how does that impede the transition, the ultimate re-entering society, if you will?
Well, there's a couple of facets, Don. First of all, they don't want to have that label that they're a homeless veteran. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to identify. And they also, if they're trying – a lot of today's veterans are trying to get back into the workforce, trying to get careers. And a lot of them are using the post-9/11 GI Bill, which is really good and strong right now. But if somebody wants to get a job or a profession that has a security clearance, or if somebody wants to get into law enforcement, they're not necessarily going to identify that they've got these issues of PTSD, as Steve spoke about, or that they've got family disruption issues, or that they might have substance abuse issues. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. We had learned a couple of years ago, Steve and I in Southern California, that really only about 15% of the veterans were registering with the Veterans Administration hospital system because they just did not want to identify that they were having issues. And they're very proud.
It's my understanding that they often don't want to mention that as they're mustering out of the service because it could be costly to them in terms of benefits or the jobs that you mentioned.
Absolutely.
Exactly. In some cases, they'll hold them back. If they say, yes, I'm having these bad thoughts, they'll hold them in for an additional couple weeks of examinations, and so they're going to simply refuse to admit it.
Talking about entering the job market, that is easier said than done, Steve, in today's economy.
It is. This war, especially a couple of years ago when we were going through the recession, as over 30% of the young guys coming back were without jobs. So it's been a real emphasis of ours to reach out to companies and reach out to young veterans and help them find employment. I think we've reduced that a little bit, but still within the very young group, 18 to 24, close to 30% are unemployed, and so we're trying very hard to get companies to understand that and get companies to look at veterans first when they're hiring.
PTSD and other ailments aside, it may just be the lack of the job that is forcing a lot of these folks out on the street.
It is. There aren't enough jobs for them. A number of them went into the military right out of high school, so they don't have any other skills other than shooting the machine gun or driving the tank. So they need retraining. As Bill said, a lot of them are using the GI Bill. So we're trying to give them an avenue. If they're lost, if they're suffering from that PTSD, we're trying to lay out the path in front of them that's going to allow them to get back into the workforce.
And Bill, a lot of them joined the military to begin with because they couldn't find a job.
In many cases, that is true.
Yeah.
And if they're going in as young veterans, and perhaps they come from a poor psychosocial support network, they really come from a disruptive family, and it makes it that much harder when they have some of the stressors that they would encounter when they're overseas in Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere on the global war of terrorism.
Yeah, we had a young woman who joined the military to get away from, one, her family, and two, the gang that she had joined because her family didn't offer her a support system. And then joined the military, participated in the cleanup after 9/11, went to Iraq, was sexually assaulted. So it was an escape for her, but she escaped. You know, she was out of the frying pan into the fire, and so she needed a lot of help from us when she came back.
Do you have a percentage of the number of women who are in a category like this who do need help?
We don't. The women and women and children are the fastest growing population among the homeless. About 14 or 15% of the military are now women. And, of course, they're in the combat zones. I mean, pretty much everywhere in Afghanistan and in Iraq is a combat zone. So they're coming back with the same combat stress as the men are.
And, Bill, you have a number of women in your facility here.
We do, women and children. And that's really great. We have some women that are going back to school, that are using vocational rehabilitation and going to community college and some trade schools. We have one woman who arrived on our doorsteps last summer in her station wagon with her two young sons. And she's doing great working at La Cote. She's studying cooking, and she's got a lot of contracts. So we do. We're seeing more and more female veterans and their children.
You opened last April.
Mm-hmm.
What is a typical stay? How long is this woman with her children likely to be with you?
Well, we are a long-term supportive housing site. So basically, she or any of our veterans can stay with us as long as they want to. We're seeing about the average length of stay is about a year. But some of our veterans, we've got a couple of veterans there who may stay there as long as they can until they perhaps need a higher level of care. We've got veterans from every era at our site. We've got young veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. We just had a Korean War veteran who we transitioned to a higher level of care. It was time for him to get into a senior assisted living.
Boy, that's going back. This has to be an elderly gentleman, probably in his 80s, I would
guess. He was 79. He was going to turn 80, and I think he turned 80 actually last week.
Steve, tell us something. Give us an overview, if you will, of U.S. Vets, the national organization.
U.S. Vets started 20 years ago. This May is our 20th year. We started with five guys in a facility in Los Angeles, in Inglewood, California. We started by, serving mostly Vietnam veterans who had been home, and a number of them had been homeless 6, 8, 10 years at that point, who needed employment. So a number of veterans were coming out of the VA, still with no place to stay, so they would stay at our place. We'd help them find employment. We've progressed over the years to serving the different populations as we see the need. We started our first women's program in 2001, probably the best program in the country is in Long Beach. We've started a young veterans program because they have different needs than the Vietnam veterans that we were serving before. And so they need more counseling. On the other end, the older gentleman that he mentioned, they need permanent housing. They're not going to go back to work. So we're increasing the number of permanent housing units that we have. So it evolves as the population evolves.
I have to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking with Steve Peck. He's the U.S. Vets CEO and president of that organization, U.S. Vets. Also with me in studio is Bill Wallace, executive director of the U.S. Vets St. Louis facility, which is housing veterans at this very moment, opened about a year ago. Back to continue our conversation, and if you have questions concerning the services that we're talking about, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on Air. You can also reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. My guests in studio are Steve Peck. He is the CEO and president of U.S. Vets, an organization which is helping America's veterans, so many of whom are homeless today. Bill Wallace is executive director of U.S. Vets St. Louis, which operates a facility here and has been doing so since last April, which provides housing and counseling for our veterans. Steve, what kind of assistance, if any, do you get from the Veterans Administration? We get a lot of mixed messages about the VA these days.
We do, and they're an interesting partner. They provide considerable assistance to us. We've grown over the years from one site to 11 sites, and they've got a program, a per diem program. So in that program, we've got about 750 veterans out of the 3,000 that we provide services to every single day. Mm-hmm. So they're providing significant help. Is it enough? It's never enough, which is why community-based organizations like ours have grown up over the years. Mm-hmm. They simply don't have the capacity to provide all the assistance that's necessary for these young veterans coming back.
Bill Wallace, how about locally?
Locally, we have an outstanding relationship with the St. Louis VA. They have the Hope Recovery Center, which is the drop-in center where a number of outpatient programs, and it's the drop-in center for the homeless veteran population here in St. Louis. And Joanne Joseph and her team of social workers and vocational rehabilitation specialists work with these individuals. We preeminently get our referrals from them, from the St. Louis VA, and we're constantly partnering to try to assist in any gaps in services.
Yeah, Steve, obviously what you want to do is get these people back on their feet. What kind of success stories do you have?
We've over the years, I'm guessing, have served close to, for the last 20 years, maybe 100,000 veterans, and about 60% of those have gone on to successfully rejoin the community. Some of our best success stories are some of our own staff members. The executive director of our Los Angeles site, Ivan Mason, one of our outreach workers contacted him while he was still in jail. He was in jail for the third time on a drug charge. And fortunately, he had made up his mind. He said, this is it. The last time I'm going to be in jail. He came into our program, started out as an AmeriCorps member. We used to work with the AmeriCorps group. Was a resident assistant, a case manager, went back to school, got his bachelor's degree, kept going back to school, got his master's degree, and now he's the site director of the largest site in our system. So if guys stick with us, I hear them say often, you know, if I listen to my case manager, if I, you know, all the decisions that they've made before got them homeless. So it's just a matter of listening to other people who have their best interests at heart, and they can succeed as much as they want.
And Bill Wallace, you are in business here for just a little bit less than a year. Do you have success stories that you can tell us?
Oh, we do have success stories. We had one veteran who was with me in Long Beach, and his name is Randy. And Randy wanted to come to St. Louis because the face of homeless veterans is very diverse. Randy was a homeless veteran who arrived on our doorstep after having made literally $300,000 a year working and running automotive, European Motors automotive shops. And he became ill, and he ended up on our doorstep in a program in Long Beach called Social Independent Living Skills. Well, he came here to St. Louis because we thought that we could try to connect him with some of the automotive companies here. And he worked for Plaza Motors, and he was stopping over in St. Louis to ultimately get to North Carolina, where his adult children are. And he is transferred there with a Plaza Motors affiliate. And so that's just it's a great story that it worked for him to be able to come here and work for 6 months and then move on to be closer to his family.
There are heartbreaking stories as well, obviously. I mean, the mere fact that they're in the situation that they're in is heartbreaking enough, but there are many of those, I'm sure. Anything come to mind that really exemplifies the worst part of it?
There was a kid who was with us. He'd been in both Iraq and Afghanistan. His dad was a Vietnam veteran who brought him into us. This kid had a very tough experience in both of his tours. He lost a lot of friends. There was a particular incident that stuck with him. He was in the front jeep of a convoy as it was about to take off, and a friend of his came up to him and said, I want to trade places with you. So he moved six vehicles back. Greg was his name. He moved six vehicles back, and his friend took his place in the front. The convoy took off, and about 20 minutes later, the front of the convoy hit an IED. The front vehicle was destroyed, and his friend was killed. It was an incident that Greg couldn't get out of his mind. You know, he had survivor's guilt. Why did I do that? Why did I change? He came back and was really just struggled. He was with us for about a year, I think. There was that anger, that guilt was always coming up. He went on ultimately to another program. I think he's in an apartment now, but those kinds of memories for some of these guys simply don't go away. It's hard.
No. Did you want to say something, Bill?
Well, I was going to refer to Steve mentioned a woman veteran who had a very poor upbringing. She was in foster care earlier. She was with us in Long Beach. She was actually discharged from the military and from Walter Reed Hospital after being at 9/11 Ground Zero and then going to Iraq, seeing a lot of trauma, being sexually assaulted, being injured. She was physically injured. She was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, ended up in Walter Reed Hospital. And she was discharged from the military. Her major brought her on a train to our site in Long Beach, and she thrived in our women's program. She really had gotten into a permanent apartment. But sadly, she passed away when she was with us because of her injuries that caught up with her, the hard life that she experienced. So that was very heartbreaking for us.
I'm particularly struck by the fact that there are children in some of these centers. How do you deal with them? I mean, this requires a special talent, special needs, and special training, I'm sure, to deal with that. Let's start with you, Bill, with regard to what's going on here.
Well, we're very fortunate. We've got a great partnership with Washington University and their Graduate School of Social Work. And we've got a case manager, Amanda, who's got a lot of training and a lot of experience working with family systems. So when we are working with a veteran and their family, we're working with the entire family. We're trying to assist that veteran with parenting skills. We're trying to assist that veteran getting their children in proper daycare and school, assessing whatever their needs are. And we assess each veteran or each veteran family with seven basic core needs and goals and create with them an action plan. And we also have some interns from the Brown School of Social Work from Washington University who are also working with us and providing their expertise and then getting training at our site as well.
This same on the national level, Steve. I'm sure that you're operating much the same way.
We are. We started our women's program in Long Beach early on, about 2001. And it was a 30-bed program. And we were having trouble filling the beds. We couldn't figure out why. And ultimately discovered that the main issue that they were – that the women were dealing with was military sexual trauma. So we instituted a treatment program for that, and since then that program has actually grown to 45 beds. But had to deal with that is, you know, there was a number of women who came with their children. We had to turn them away because we didn't have capacity. So we've begun a program there for women with their children so they can go through that treatment and not give up their kids.
Where does the money come from? I mean, if you're sending children to daycare, somebody has to pay for that.
We always put together a variety of sources. Some of that is coming from the VA. Some of that is coming from housing and urban development, local foundations. It's an issue that people are aware of now. So we really are appealing to foundations and corporations to help us run those programs.
You have a website, I would gather, in order to solicit, if you will?
We do, www.usvetsinc.org. And it describes all of our programs. So we were fortunate a couple of months ago to start another women's program in Hawaii. So I think all in all, we've got about 100 vets from 100 female veterans.
USVets.org was that?
USVetsInc.org.
USVetsInc.org. Okay, we'll get a
Thank
link
you.
To that on our website a little bit later in the
Perfect.
Day. In the limited time we have left, let me just ask you, Bill, start with you, about your own transition back. You're an Army veteran, as I understand it. How tough was it for you?
Well, it was there were some issues. I was an Army veteran. I served in Panama, and I served almost a year in Bosnia. And when I came back, I was in the reserves at that time, and I got activated and sent to Bosnia with the first wave of NATO ground troops. And when I came home, I'm a big believer that if you're in a war zone, there's certain symptoms of PTSD you're going to come home with. You know, you're going to have some obtrusive thoughts, some obtrusive memories. You're going to have some sleep disturbance. But it's all about what we tell our veterans. It's learning to live with your symptoms, not letting your symptoms live with you. So I was very fortunate that I came from a great family, a wonderful community. I had a family who gave me the space and the awareness to grow and transition back. I also was in Bosnia when I was 36 years old, so I had some life experience behind me where some of the younger guys who I was with, 17-year-old machine gunners, just didn't necessarily have that. And so
They're kids.
Yeah. And so I knew pretty quickly, I was in the entertainment industry out in California, that I wanted to that I liked working, and so I got back into a school and got a degree in clinical psychology and started working first for the VA at a U.S. vet site in Los Angeles. And then I worked there for 2 years in the clinical office at U.S. Vets Inglewood or Los Angeles, and then had the opportunity with Steve's help to go down and work at the Long Beach site.
Hey, Steve, what about your transition?
I came back from Vietnam in 1970. And pretty much when I got out of the Marine Corps, pretty much threw away my uniforms, got rid of everything. I essentially wanted to ignore the fact that I was there and managed to do that for 8 or 9 years. But when you go through that kind of experience, it doesn't leave you. And you simply have to, as Bill said, you have to find a place for it in your life. So after 8 or 9 years, I encountered a veterans group just by circumstance, and they were talking about all the things that they had been through, and it was my bells were going off in my head. So I realized it was something that I had to deal with, and which I did through some documentary films. I was a documentary filmmaker, mm-hmm. So I did some documentary films about the combat experience, which was very cathartic. And ultimately, in 1992, switched careers.
And putting what you learned and what you experienced to good use now with the U.S. Vets.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Keep up the good work. Obviously, it's an ongoing need, and probably always will be the way this world works. But I want to thank you so much for being with us. Bill Wallace, thank you. And Steve Peck, thank you so much. Good luck to U.S. Vets.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate it.
We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.